Moncrief on News Talk.
As we were saying just before the break there, social class, it's a bit more blurry than it used to be. You kind of millionaires who regard themselves as working class or posh sounding people who haven't got a bean. In what was the traditionally class obsessed United Kingdom, a major survey set out to discover people's perceptions of class in the 21st century. And as a result, the research from People First came up with a new set of social classes, not three, but six of them. This work was done in conjunction with The Telegraph, where we're joined by their senior special projects reporter, Conor Ibbotson. Conor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today.
Please tell us a bit about, in the course of this study, what were you asking people?
So what we wanted to examine was the kind of the traditional class system that a lot of politicians and policymakers use is vastly out of date. It was based on research done for directing print advertising in the 1960s, if you can believe it. And what we wanted to do was try and see what do people perceive as the key markers of class in 2026. Is it still about your wealth? Is it still about whether you watch soap operas or whether you go to the opera? And really whether we could kind of blend those two into a two-dimensional matrix and move away from kind of this idea of just linear class.
Yeah, in the sense that it's not a cut and dried what the little spaces are between those classes, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So like what we wanted to kind of explore was, as you said in the intro, like the people who are very well culturally engaged, but kind of, you know, not what people would define as financially elite, or those people who perhaps they've got money, they'll enjoy a quiet, comfortable lifestyle, but you know, they're not down the country club every weekend.
Yeah,
kind of people who aren't really represented well by the idea of just simply working middle or upper class.
Yeah, but when they were speaking to people, and they spoke to something like 13,000 people. Well, did they examine, because that perception, you know, the kind of, you know, Rishi Sunak, you know, saying, "Oh, I didn't have Sky when I was growing up," you know, and somehow this was a sign of how what a rootsy individual he was. That people's perception of what class they are mightn't necessarily gel with what other people's perception of what class they are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a real kind of talking point here in the office and amongst our readers. And what we found is kind of, at least my perception, is that a lot of people seem to reminisce or kind of strongly associate themselves with a class at a particular point in their life. And so, for example, as you say, kind of people who perhaps may have grown up in working class circumstances, like, you know, their dad had a manual job, their mum didn't work, and kind of, you know, but now they've kind of gone on to found their own business perhaps and doing much better, and they still kind of hold on to those working class roots, even though other people would perceive them as kind of, you know, you're a well-off business owner, you're not one of the working class anymore, you've changed.
Mm. Was there that admission among the people studied that questioned that your social class can change?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what this showed, because one of the questions that we asked people that was quite a clear marker, one of our clear markers of where you were going in this system, was kind of whether you felt like people were surprised when you told them about your background. That kind of goes both ways, you know, people who may have grown up in a higher class and people are surprised that they don't exhibit those kind of characteristics anymore, or vice versa.
But they would probably still see themselves as being, if they came from a modest background, as identifying with that background.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a curious, it gets more complicated the more you kind of think about it, really. Now, tell us something. Now, you come up with six different categories of class. Tell us something of the thinking that went into this.
So, what we tried to do was examine people on these two different axes, one being your finances, but not just your salary. So that included things like how you manage your money, your approach to things like investing and all this sort of stuff. And the other axis being kind of your cultural participation, your hobbies, lifestyle choices, the way you pronounce certain words. And kind of plotting out the kind of, you know, 13,000 people that we surveyed for this on that, those two axes kind of produced these kind of six distinct kind of clusters of density of people who had kind of matching answers. It's the sort of thing where, like, if you really kept going and slicing and dicing and diving really into it, you could make an infinite number of groups. But these were kind of the six kind of clearest, most easy to kind of identify and explain.
Mm. And how did you come to the conclusions that the cultural participation and there was a financial aspect were the key determinants of class?
Well, kind of that was our starting point, because those were kind of quite seen as like your traditional markers of class. But I think that people often think about those things separately. You think someone's either rich or poor, or they're very well cultured, or they're not. And what we tried to do, yeah, was try and blend these two things together and kind of, you know, no one's expecting the government to rewrite all their policy today and use our system. It's more of a talking point. It's kind of get people thinking about, you know, this, you know, as a country, the UK is very class obsessed, but there's a different way to think about it than just A or B or C or D.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting because I assume a lot of people listening to us might assume that an indicator is who your parents were and where you went to school. Did that seem to be less important to people now?
Yeah, because what we were looking at was kind of perception. So that definitely plays a factor. But when looking at kind of perception, we wanted to examine people in the here and now. We took into account their background, but class is so mobile now compared to, you know, even 50 years ago. There's so many people moving around this kind of system that we've built. And as we said, kind of people who don't necessarily see themselves where we've placed them, because they're like, well, I hold true to kind of where I was 30 years ago or where I was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Though I suppose, I mean, because as you said, I mean, a lot of the policy decisions now are made on distinctions drawn up in the 1960s. And in the 1960s, there would have been, for instance, far fewer people who'd been to university, whereas now it's much more common.
Yeah, absolutely. So the class distinctions that are commonly used, I'm sure most of your listeners will have heard at some point, the common phrases ABC1 and C2DE, which also, you know, not particularly the best, the most interesting sounding names, but they broadly spoke to the middle class and the working class. And when those were defined, it was about, if I remember rightly, 30-70 split, and kind of it roughly equates as well to white collar jobs and blue collar jobs. And now that split is gone completely in the other direction. I think it's now about 40%, 60% versus 40%.
Now, now to go into the six categories that you've drawn up, there is one, I suppose to start at the top, there is one that you do call the elite. Now, that's 7% of the population of the UK, you estimate. Now, what defines them?
So they're defined quite typically, as you'd imagine, by the highest salaries. But it's not just about the salary; it's also about their approach to money. Like, these are people who are taking risks and making investments, buying stocks and shares. They probably have some kind of passive income, maybe from those stocks and shares, maybe a rental. But they're also incredibly well culturally engaged, and that kind of engagement is helped driven by their wealth. It's worth noting that under the old kind of quote-unquote old system, the upper classes was about 2%. So what we've kind of found is that more people are falling into our kind of, you know, uppermost category.
Yeah. Was there any way of rating what kind of power they have? Particularly because, you know, a lot of people with a lot of money, you know, they donate to political parties, etc.
So we didn't really ask that question exactly, but what we did find interesting was we did examine people's voting intention, and what you would traditionally class as your Labour voter here in the UK would be kind of, or at least what they would define as their core voters, are kind of working people, perhaps the middle class as well. And what we found was that those groups are completely split between various parties, including the Conservatives, the Greens, Reform UK. And it's the people who are more financially stable, including that kind of elite group, who are more likely to be Labour voters than their peers.
Okay, that's interesting. One assumes, though, I mean, is that a snapshot in time, or might that change in 5 years' time, or it was different 5 years ago?
Well, who can say? I think things may be very different after the local elections here in the UK. The fieldwork for this was done between summer and January this year. So the continued rise of the Green Party may change that. But it's the sort of thing that we're keeping the survey going and constantly updating the numbers and seeing how it's changing.
Right. So and right at the other end, away from the elite, there's what you call the left behind, or I assume people who just feel utterly disenfranchised.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of, we're very conscious, like, class is a deeply personal thing, and we don't want to be seen punching down. Nobody wants that. These are people who have been disenfranchised, left behind by politicians, the traditional working class, perhaps not so well catered for anymore by our politicians and policymakers.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, maybe he's gone. Are you there, Connor?
Hello.
Oh, no, there you are. Sorry. Yeah, I thought, I think the line dropped there. So you were saying that they feel let down by policymakers. And are they almost like a separate from the rest of society, that they feel disengaged from it?
I don't know if I would go that far. These are just typically kind of working class people, perhaps on lower incomes. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're less culturally engaged. Each of these groups we've defined have a huge amount of variance within them. The kind of the way we've tried to define them is merely as clusters, rather than they're clusters of individual people, rather than us saying this is a complete stereotype or archetype. Like, not everyone within this group is in the same boat.
The other classes you've come up with, the Dreamers, the just about managing, the quietly comfortable, the ambitious high earners, are they all what, you know, could be loosely gathered in what we, you know, used to call the middle classes?
So, the Dreamers and the quietly comfortable definitely contain a lot of people who would previously been captured under the banner of middle class. The ambitious high earners and the elite kind of lean towards upper class, and the just about managing and the left behind kind of, they lean towards and capture a lot of people who would have been previously considered working class.
Connor, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Connor Ibbotson there, Senior Special Projects Reporter with The Telegraph.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.